of nice to know that there are people out there doing wonderful work. Stanley B. Goldenberg, a guy with lots of energy and lots of nerve. He actually goes out and looks at these damn hurricanes up close. At least that's what I read. Yes. Is that true?
Yes.
He gets in the plane and takes a ride, and then he bumps around inside of those things, and he comes back and he says, "You know, that was one of those whirling clouds, wasn't it?" Stanley is a meteorologist with the Hurricane Research Center in Florida. He's also been a research scientist at the University of Washington. And he taught, I think this is a very interesting reference that I got off one of these internet things. He taught at Messianic Jewish Academy, which means that he is a teacher at heart. And he's here to teach us a little bit about hurricanes. And he particularly has played a kind of a central role in the issue of do El Niños or La Niñas cause an increase or a decrease in hurricanes? And since the boys in Florida are our hurricane counters and studiers, I think it's a wonderful thing that Stanley could be here and that he will discuss with you his favorite area, bumpy circular cloud things.
I'll tell you, it sure beats reading just the bio. That's not what I wrote, was it? Real quickly here, for those who know what it is, Chag Sameach, Happy Purim tonight, and that starts this evening. And I have to introduce them. Two of my daughters, two of eight daughters, with me. I also have three sons. But why don't you all stand up? That's Pearl and Bethany. They're 16 and 14. Thank you. And Pearl is very famous because she was born the night of Hurricane Andrew. She was born, they didn't even get my talk ready. Hey. Okay. How do I do this? I should? Okay, right there. There we go. And then I click on this. I got it. Okay. Is that better? And she was born 12 hours before the eye wall hit Miami and totally destroyed our house. I left the hospital to go home to be with my three boys, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, and their three boys, and our house was ripped apart on top of us. The hospital, thankfully, was right out of the devastation area, and they still had a pretty bad storm, but nothing like what we had. And so I didn't see her for about 24, 36 more hours. And but that story's been on umpteen TV specials. So next time you'll tune in, you'll see Andrew stuff, and you'll say, wait, I remember that guy. But anyway, just to mention, I did bring some handouts. I did a PowerPoint printout of my talk. A few slides are slightly different. I changed a few things since it came out. And on the back of it are a couple extra sheets, like my favorite list of all sorts of nice, helpful links on the other side of the global warming issue that I give out to people all the time. And then there's just some fun hurricane stuff over there. There's plenty of copies. So, you want to pass them all around? Yeah, there's not enough of the other stuff. But may I make a suggestion? Just pass around the talk and let people get the other stuff later. And I'll tell you, I put this in the talk. I have also pictures. It's a diagram of what the plane is, the hurricane plane, and all the instruments bring home for your kids. And I didn't put this in the talk, but this is Floyd versus Andrew. And you can pretty much see it from back there. Andrew's the tiny one. This is the same scale, virtually the same strength, and same location. Thankfully, Floyd turned, went up north, caused tremendous flooding. But if it had hit Miami, it would have dwarfed the devastation from Hurricane Andrew. And a lot of these devastating storms we've seen recently, none of them are the worst-case scenario. None of them. All of them could be much worse. And it doesn't take global warming, just a little shift in track, a little change in intensity. And like the other speaker said, I'm not here officially representing NOAA, but this is much of this is NOAA research. And I'd love to show more pretty hurricane pics, but I want to get into some of the science. I feel like I'm in a medical session here, but we're going to deal with meteorology. And I wanted you to really get an idea of why, now listen to this, not a single scientist at the National Hurricane Center, the Hurricane Research Division, the Joint Typhoon Warning Center, I'm trying to find out about the Central Pacific Hurricane Center, believe that hurricanes, numbers, activity, that there's any measurable impact from any so-called global warming. There's a reason for that, even though there's other scientists out there that feel that way. Now this is preaching to the choir, but when I give this talk at other science meetings, I have to explain what I mean by global warming, because I am talking about it in my talk. And basically, AGW, anthropogenic global warming, otherwise called Al Gore warming, is not the same as global warming, is not the same as climate change. And just because the Earth is warm, according to some measurements, about 0.7 degrees in the last 100 years, one of my sons did a survey for a class, and he asked people, how much do you think it's warmed? And I mean, he got 20 degrees, 10 degrees. I mean, people think it's got to be these huge numbers. But anyway, it doesn't mean that it's Al Gore warming, anthropogenic global warming. Just because climate change has happened doesn't mean AGW. Just because weather disasters happen doesn't mean AGW. And an inconvenient truth, and most of the media are speaking of CAGW. That's very important. They're not talking about just AGW. They're talking about catastrophic. If we just have a little bit of warming from man-made causes, nobody really cares. But they're talking about this going to be catastrophic. And the fact is, as you all know from this conference, there's numerous scientists who don't believe this. So we'll skip that because we all know that. And the debate, as you also know, is masked by media censorship, bias, and distortion. I'm interviewed quite a bit on many, many levels. And thankfully, most of our interviews are benign. They're on our side. They're trying to get out to the public. But when we touch this area, I've seen gross, gross, blatant censorship. Anybody from the media, I'd be glad to argue with you about it. I have firsthand experience. I challenge anybody from a mainstream media source to take and print a positive report on this conference. They won't get it past the editors. If they do, miracles do happen. It's Purim. As far as hurricane activity, we have seen if the observations are right, a long-term warming trend in the tropical oceans. And so I'll simply refer to that as global warming throughout the rest of the talk without saying what the cause is. The future projections are, of course, based on the global climate model results with increased CO2. And let me say something about El Nino forecast. Now, my major professor, I don't know if he's James O'Brien, is giving a talk in the next session somewhere. And he was like one of the Mr. El Ninos, talking about El Nino before most of the public knew what it was. And I did some of my research under him. And the issue is right now, with all the money, all the different models that are out there, there's not a single climate model that can reliably predict an El Nino occurrence, even 1 to 2 months in advance. Now, those are climate models. We're not talking about weather models. 1 to 2 months in advance. In fact, we had a situation where we put out our NOAA forecast. This is the truth. And beginning of August, we were updating it for the seasonal outlook for the hurricane activity. And we based it on that it was going to be a neutral El Nino, not El Nino, not La Nina season. Within 2 weeks, they had officially declared an El Nino. And we were scandalized. Said, didn't anybody know this was going to happen? I mean, the forecasts are atrocious. I'm not saying they're worthless. They're learning more. But as of now, those climate models cannot predict this massive, well-known, well-studied phenomena that we have a lot of historical record on with any reliability. Occasionally, they get it right. Historical results here are based on attempted associations between observed historical long-term warming trend, whether it be natural, man-made, or a combination of the two, and we're wondering, are the current levels of activity affected by global warming? Now, this is the key issue here. When you see all these studies, is the problems with using the historical tropical cyclone database. So let me make your eyes cross with all this stuff. First, you have the temporal, the time scale, non-homogeneity. You have new observational platforms and tools continually added out there. Prior to 1944, you only had ship observations and, of course, island and land observations. But out there over the water, you just had ship observations, when they measured them, how they might have reported them. And frankly, the ships usually try and avoid the storms. Okay, so they're not going to be out there measuring a Cat 5 storm at sea and live to tell about it normally, or know that it was for sure a Cat 5. The aircraft reconnaissance aircraft, 44 to present, they did fly for a while in the West Pacific basin. They don't routinely fly there, so they only sampled that for a little while with the planes. And believe me, we see constant comparisons between what we see from the satellite and what we see when we go out there on the planes, and it is radically different many times. Now, the satellites are our best tool we can use. We don't have the plane out there, but we always would choose the plane over the satellite when possible. Bill Gray fought against efforts to get rid of the reconnaissance program. Let's save a lot of money. We got all the satellites, and all we could tell them was in situ, right there, measurements is much different than trying to do with the satellite. We're grateful for the satellites, but they don't replace the planes. Planes don't replace a satellite. But the aircraft equipment is constantly changing and improving. In just the past 5 years, we add tool after tool after tool, and the interpretation of the data is constantly changing. When Andrew hit in 1992, they declared it was a Category 4 hurricane. 10 years later, not based on new data, just a new understanding of how to interpret the data, they change it to a Category 5. And I happened to be in Hurricane Katrina. I flew it on the landfall flight, and I was actually processing the drop zones that were measuring the winds at the surface, and we were getting Category 3. The Hurricane Center said Category 4. I shut my mouth. I thought, well, they're looking at other data besides ours. Well, 2 months later, they changed it to Category 3. I mean, there's a lot that goes into this, and that's part of my expertise. It's not just publishing and writing. It's the idea that I've seen how the data is taken. I know how it's processed. I know how we interpret it, and therefore how careful you have to be in using it. There are improvements to the land observations, the addition of satellite observations, and continually monitored starting in 66. But believe me, new satellites, they're changing every year. Let's see if I can get to more of the talk here. Spatial non-homogeneity. I'm just going to quickly whiz through this. The data quality changes between basin and basin. Even within the basin, it's different. Satellite coverage used to be far from uniform. Even in the Atlantic basin, you couldn't see stuff all the way to the east because there weren't as many satellites. Many of the alleged global warming related increases or trends in the data tend to match exactly these changes in the observational tools. And the similar trends this is the key thing here. Yes, CO2 is going up, temperatures for a period go up. That doesn't mean cause and effect. And just because the SSTs are going up, we have an increase in the population in Florida. I don't know if those are related. Okay, what controls the hurricane activity in the Atlantic? Lots of things, not the sea surface temperature. In particular, we have VZ, which would be vertical wind shear. And that's one of the most important effects. You can have everything else favorable. If vertical wind shear is unfavorable, you aren't going to get a hurricane. And what it is, it's the difference between the upper and the lower level winds. When that difference is relatively light, the hurricane can organize in the vertical. When it's strong, it rips the storm apart, kind of decapitates it, and then there's all points in between. You've got to have favorable vertical shear. Okay, what's happened with the tropical cyclone activity in the Atlantic? We use several parameters that are kind of an overall measure of activity, net tropical cyclone activity, NTC, and there's ACE, which is accumulated cyclone energy. Both of them, we'll say 100% is about average. So for the Atlantic, from 1950 to 2008, I have to keep extending this out, this is average right here. Green is below average. And you can see there was a period with a lot of above average years. And above this pink line, we call that hyperactive. I have 11 kids. I can talk about hyperactive. And then you hit a period here, not a single year. And this was very well observed here. Not a single year. There was hyperactive, hardly anything above average. And in 95, you switch back again. That sure looks like a cycle to me. Now, notice that if you're honest, you'll say this looks a lot more active than this back here. We'll talk about that in a moment. What's causing this? What's it associated with? And this is a paper we publish in Science, actually got in Science, front cover in 2001, got a lot of press with Bill Gray, with Chris Lancey, Alberto Mestiz Nunez. And basically you have high activity air, low activity air associated with changes in the sea surface temperature. This is actually what's called an empirical orthogonal function analysis. But what that does, and I'll mention it later, it pulls out modes of variability within the data. So you see the different ways the data is changing, what's causing different changes. And again, you have several decades of warmer than normal, several decades of colder than normal temperatures, and those are associated with these changes. This isn't a trend. These are cycles, multi-decadal cycles. But increased sea surface temperatures do not automatically mean more hurricanes, especially more of the major hurricanes. It takes changes in the atmospheric circulation. In fact, we did a paper years ago with Dr. Shapiro that showed that the direct local effect of the SST, in other words, how warm it is under the storm, those changes account for only 10% of the variability of activity. It's the atmospheric circulation that means a lot more. And in fact, in 2006, it was the second highest observed sea surface temperature on record in the main development region, right in the tropics in the Atlantic. And it was almost as high as 2005. And the amount of activity was just basically average compared to 2005, which was about 2.5 times average. And in 1997, a super El Nino year, which created very high vertical shear, you still had sea surface temperature in the Atlantic above average, but you didn't have high hurricane. And the reason that's so important is their mentality is if sea surface temperatures are getting warmer, that feeds the hurricanes, more hurricanes. But that's only a very, very small part of the picture. And this is just an example of vertical shear. It's kind of flipped because this is the size of the area of favorable shear, very low shear. So for these 20 years, 50s and 60s, you had a very large area of favorable, weak shear, and you had high activity era. Then you had a small area of weak shear, and you had low activity, and then we're back to this high activity era again recently. So it's the shear associated with these changes in ocean circulation that's doing it. Now, let me quickly hit the end of the science article. This is actually stapled to the back of that handout, so you can read it yourself later. But sure, we saw there was a long-term trend in ocean temperatures in that main development region. And we could say, yes, maybe this increase, this recent increase is in part due for those increases in sea surface temperatures. But also, it could be due to the better observational network in place. And all the research we've done recently has said it's the observations that have changed radically that we're able to see. Now there's been some very rigorous studies that have done that. And in the, I'll just mention from the science article, I mean, these recent disasters we've been having have not been a surprise. I mean, they're horrible disasters, but we expected this great increase in activity due to the shift to the favorable era. And I'm going to, last 5 minutes, whiz through some of the debate that's been raging back and forth. There, basically, after we published that science article, all of a sudden there started coming out some talks and some people and scientists, well-known scientists. I remember at the beginning it was a shock to people like Chris Lancey and I that these very known names would say things that we considered, frankly, so ridiculous. And a bad interpretation of the data that all this activity was caused by these long-term trends. And I'm going to just skip some of the stuff. There was tendency, of course, some in the media, some scientific circles to attribute almost any increase in natural disasters to anthropogenic global warming. If it's bad, it must be global warming. And then there was a few prominent scientists that started to push it. And then the key thing in 2005, two published articles in Nature and Science that started to attribute this increase in activity. And this is just from Katrina. You know, I mean, why was Katrina a disaster? Was it because it was such a strong storm, or was it the levees? The same storm hitting somewhere else would not cause that type of disaster. This is from inside the eye of Hurricane Katrina, our flight that night. You know, you look recently at the Bay of Bengal hurricane that hit this last year, 100,000 deaths. 100,000 deaths, and who came out immediately, of course, and blamed on global warming? You know, Al Gore. We knew that would happen. Well, he forgot history. And if you look back, 1991 had even more deaths, 77 had comparable deaths, and then you had 1970 with 500,000 deaths. So really, you look down, and global warming is reducing the threat of hurricanes in that area. But let me just mention something from these articles that came out, and I'll have to skip some of this. You'll have it in your handout, and you can look, because there's a lot of technical stuff, and some of you absorb it, some won't. But just to give you an idea, and if I go 2 minutes over, he won't throw a shoe at me, but is that the Webster, one of the articles was Webster et al., came out in Science in 2005, and he analyzed the global Category 4 and 5 hurricanes, and he said basically that they doubled over the last 35 years. So he showed, yeah, look, the sea surface temperatures are going up, and here's, you know, no change in Category 1, no change in 2s and 3s, no change in the maximum wind speed, but the Category 5s doubled in this period of time. Well, there was an incredible result. The media went all over it, and no increase in any other parameter. But the interesting thing is, in the last 15 years, that level has stayed just the same. Well, the secret is that, first of all, just because it's published doesn't make it true. I think some of you know that, especially Science and Nature. The scientific meteorological hurricane community went all over him. They saw so many problems in their paper. There was articles published against it, But the main thing is even just peer discussion, just people saying there's this error and this error and this error. You sit there, and in 1970, started in 1970, because he said, well, that's when satellite data started. But the quality and the way we analyze it changed tremendously since 1970. This is the key, the Dvorak infrared technique to analyze the infrared satellite data only got introduced around 1988, 89, globally. That's when it flattened out. In other words, all of a sudden they started analyzing all these storms, and then it just leveled off globally. So he was really seeing a change in that. Plus, he started at a low point in both the North Atlantic hurricane activity and the West Pacific activity. In other words, they were both stronger before 1970, so he was getting the low point of the cycle and seeing just this increase of the cycle. And kind of talked about that already. He had a problem with the use of the data in almost all of the tropical cyclone basins. And I'm going to skip a little bit here. Excuse me. This just talks about, and again, this is in the handout here. Kerry Emanuel came out with stuff, showed this huge increase in another index, the cube of the wind speed, and said, look at this massive, got it published in Nature, got tremendous. This is something that I believe Lindzen talked about the first night. And then Lancy published back at him and showed that he had analyzed it wrong, didn't filter the endpoints right, suppressed the, all sorts of problems with that. And thankfully that was published as a comment. And I'm just going to get to my... Oh, this just shows as far as the measurements. You just sit there and look, and here's the 2005 season, 1933, almost just as active. What were they measuring out here? We didn't have satellite. You didn't have a lot of ship reports. You didn't have the reconnaissance. Maybe there was a lot of activity. You didn't measure the stuff back then. And I'll get to... Just one more, and then I'll give you the conclusion, is that if you look at the raw tropical storm and hurricane numbers over a century, you get a trend. The problem is, again, the observational network was so different here. When Lancy accounted, this is something in submission, paper in submission, accounted for the fact they didn't measure the short-lived storms, they didn't measure all these data areas, and then went back, and you can't do this perfectly. You can never prove this absolutely because you can't go back and fill in that data, but you use some rigorous scientific methods. When he did that, the trend totally disappeared. And anyway, I'll just summarize that the historical studies that carefully use the reliable parts of the historical record find no discernible trend in any measurement of tropical cyclone activity in any basin or globally. The future model projections, now there are some model projections that say, you know, you're going to have increased vertical shear, maybe fewer North Atlantic hurricanes, maybe some stronger storms. These are models. And I don't know how much I trust those. Yeah, what does it matter to people? You've got to get ready for hurricanes, period. If I tell you this storm is coming at you because of global warming, or this storm is just coming at you, you've got to get ready and really deal with preparedness. Thank you very much.